Yep.
Okay, I'd like to call this meeting to order.
Mrs. Avalos by phone?
Here.
Mr. Davis?
Here.
Mrs. DeGracias?
Here.
Mrs. Hickey by phone?
Here.
Mr. Moore?
Here.
Dr. Thompson by phone?
Here.
Ms. Williams?
Here.
Number two, recognize visitors and invite comments from the public. As a member of the public and a parent, I would like to thank the District 90 administration, teachers, and all the professionals that work here in District 90. As a parent, we are very grateful. Kids learned a lot of stuff today, so thank you.
I have to add to that, Rich. I got an unsolicited email from a parent today who said, I applaud the way Dr. Harmon has handled this situation.
Very good.
I have good and kind of bad, but I won't read the bad. Just to kind of keep it going. Let's see. Well, my kids seem to breeze through it all in 2 hours. It seems light. That was for high school and grade school. I'm impressed with my daughter's work, awesome STEM videos, and also my daughter is getting responses back from teachers almost immediately.
Sweet.
All right. So, from the public, we thank you. Number three, can I have a motion to approve the agenda?
Second.
Mrs. Avalos?
Yes.
Mr. Davis?
Yes.
Mrs. DeGracias?
Yes.
Mrs. Hickey?
Yes.
Mr. Moore?
Yes.
Dr. Thompson?
Yes.
Ms. Williams?
Yes.
Okay, any communications?
None.
Okay. And can I have a motion to approve the consent agenda, which includes board meetings from February 18th, closed meeting tape from February 18th, and committee of the whole meeting March 3rd, bill list, and treasurer's report.
So moved.
Second.
Ms. Williams?
Yes.
Dr. Thompson?
Yes.
Mr. Moore?
Yes.
Mrs. Hickey?
Yes.
Mrs. DeGracias?
Yes.
Mr. Davis?
Yes.
Mrs. Avalos?
Yes.
Okay, board committee reports. Anything from the education committee? Dr. Thompson?
Nothing to report.
Okay, personnel. Ms. Hickey?
I believe there are some documents in the personnel or in the packet regarding personnel that we'll talk about a little later.
Okey-do. Policy, Ms. Williams?
There was a policy language. Is that in the agenda later? Okay.
Finance, Mr. Davis?
We're going to talk about windows, fees, and treasury report payables are in the packet. And something else, too.
Ms. Williams, do we have anything from the equity?
No.
No, not since our last report. Ms. DeGracias, facilities?
We will be talking about windows a little bit later.
Communications? Ms. Avalos?
I would just say that what a great job that Don and Ed have done over the last week getting everyone prepared. And I also have heard really positive feedback from parents about the information they've received. I think there's copies of some of the communication later in the packet.
Great. Ad hoc Gender Inclusion Committee has not met since our last report. Ad hoc Education Foundation has not met since our last report either. So now we move to the outside meetings. Council of Governments. Nothing to report, and no meeting date established. OPRF Community Council, Ms. DeGracia, was canceled, right?
Canceled, yeah.
Okay. Youth Network Council, Ms. Williams.
Youth Network Council was also canceled, but there was a wonderful flyer coming out with some prevention events that were planned for April, but which I expect are probably not going to go forward at this point in time, including screenagers 1 and 2, a health fair, and a few other events. But I am not optimistic that any of this is going to come together with the present climate. So it's unfortunate, but there it is.
Board liaison, district PTO, Barb.
They did not. Well, I think we were supposed to meet Friday, but I cannot imagine that that's going to happen. Is it, Ed?
No, that will not happen.
Okay.
Inclusiveness Advisory Board.
I would assume most of you saw the email that was sent out about the postponement of the storytelling event, which is a really unfortunate thing. But, you know, as Barb was saying, for the Youth Network Council, it just doesn't seem like those kinds of things will be happening in the next month. And we were supposed to have a meeting, I think, on Wednesday that I'm assuming is canceled.
It is. We'll be communicating that with the IAB members.
Great.
River Forest Civic Association.
So no updates or meetings from the last time we met. They're still looking at a reorganization and what to do moving forward.
Okay. West Cook Governing Board has nothing to report there. A meeting date scheduled for June 2nd. Let's see what happens. There. Ed Red meeting coming up April 3rd. Not sure of the status of that meeting.
Well, the Citizens Corp was having a CPR certification function, and they invited the board. It was April 25th. I have to see if it's still canceled or not. But they wanted as, you know, it was open to the public, and I asked what. You know, would it be good to have the board here? He goes, oh, sure. And whatever other administrators wanted to come.
River Forest Subcommittee on Collaboration, Barb?
Well, I was hoping to convene that group. And it, if we had pulled everything together, it would have fallen apart anyway. I was hoping that you and I and Ed, Rich, could sit down and talk about some of the possibilities for early childhood, discussions about early childhood, because I think there is a lot of interest in using subcommittee to try to kind of take a look at the larger community and what is available. And I know that from talking to Kathy Aducey that the Erickson Institute will send a team to do an evaluation, and I wanted you and I and Ed to talk about the implications of that and try to get some more information and see whether we might want to take advantage of that at some point in time. But it's on the back burner right now.
Okay, and we have our, on our agenda, we have early childhood education, we have our preschool contract with the community center that will be approved. All right.
I'm sorry, did I miss something there?
No, I just mentioned that in terms of early childhood education that we have our preschool contract on the agenda later.
Right.
So, district calendar review?
Yes, so we do have a calendar in the board packet that was placed there before some of the things that have occurred recently. But several of the events are still on the books. So March 23rd through 27th is still spring recess. There will be no e-learning that takes place during that week. The committee of the whole meeting is currently scheduled for April 7th. My guess is that if the board decides to proceed with that, it would likely be done virtually, but of course there'll be some conversations to come. The district does have a non-attendance day scheduled on the 10th, and a Board of Education meeting on April 20th. Those are the events probably that will all get some attention in terms of trying to think about what will happen and how they will be structured moving forward.
I have a future question about, I don't know if you've gotten to it yet, obviously graduation, if it regretfully gets to a point where you can't do it,
I can't hear. I'm sorry.
I'm just asking about the potential of no graduation for the eighth graders, but there's no real answer, I guess. It's just something I thought about.
Right. We're currently just for the moment, and we know we're going to have to think further than this, but we're looking really at that May 1st deadline mm-hmm. as the one that has been recommended for no large gatherings up until then. Originally, that was a much larger group size than it is today. As a matter of fact, the White House has issued current recommendations of gatherings no larger than 10. So we'll have to see.
Doesn't count if they're on the phone.
That having been said, all kidding aside, we understand that events of that nature are important.
Yeah.
Important for different reasons. They're important symbolically. They're important to families. They're important in terms of what they represent.
Right.
And so we want to be really thoughtful. We don't want to be cavalier.
Right.
There may be events that, because of their nature, end up being postponed mm-hmm. instead of being canceled. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we're open to a lot of different ideas moving forward.
I know that in the past, Roosevelt graduations have been open air in out on the field, so maybe those restrictions wouldn't apply to open air gatherings. So, but again, something we need to get a handle on this week, right? And then look for guidance from the CDC on all of those events. So, good question.
We did have a couple of district meetings as well. So the PTO Council met last month. There's a copy of that for board members on page 33 of your packet. You can see we spent some time talking about, everything from the Illinois Assessment for Readiness, which will likely need to be addressed somehow from the state. Certainly the work that's been done on our D90 strategic plan. I'm pleased to share with the board tonight that the strategic planning team did technically finish their task, and so we're really proud of that. We don't have that on the board agenda tonight, but that will be forthcoming, hopefully at the April CAL if that takes place. We also discussed the recent Teacher Institute Day on February 18th, and we talked a little bit with parents about our efforts for teacher recruiting and hiring that have been happening this spring. We also had a Superintendent's Leadership Council meeting on February 19th, and there, really the main focus of the group was in two things, debriefing our survey data from teachers about how they felt that the recent standards-based learning professional development day went, and what kind of supports they need moving forward, and then, again, we looked at the roadmaps, which is a document that we're using to kind of chart our course toward implementation. It's an implementation timetable, and we discuss some refinements that would be needed on that for the coming year, 2020-2021.
We'll move to the superintendent's report.
So tonight we've got several action items, and I'm going to ask actually that Anthony would move through most of them. I'd like to start with the first, if I may. So in light of the circumstances, the school district, as everyone, of course, is well aware, does require authorization from the board to do a number of things, and one of them is to pay bills in order to pay for our expenses and approve contracts. The good news, if there is some regarding board meetings, is that the governor and ISBE worked with, I think, some of our legislators to give us some temporary relief from certain components in the Open Meetings Act that will probably allow this body to meet virtually and have that count towards Open Meetings Act compliant meeting requirement. Until that happened, however, if this Board of Ed was unable to meet to approve bills, we would be unable to pay them. As a result, best practice probably in a circumstance like this would be to propose to the board for consideration that you might temporarily delegate the authority to the administration to pay the bills on behalf of the district to make sure we continue to maintain our business functions, even if the board for some reason is not able to meet. The other condition, even with the lifting of some of the Open Meetings Act requirements around quorum, and board members being present in person that could occur, Lord forbid, would be if we had a situation where a significant enough number of members of the body couldn't even meet virtually or were ill such that they weren't able to participate effectively on a virtual meeting. So tonight, the first action item that we're bringing forth, which was drafted by Ken Flory, one of your board attorneys who does some work for the district, is a resolution requesting that you would please consider granting access, or excuse me, granting authority to the administration to pay your bills in case you're unable to meet and approve that. This resolution does have a terminal date, so it's not open-ended. It's actually in August, you'll see. And of course, if for some reason you were unhappy with the way the administration was conducting your affairs, you would have the ability to direct one of your attorneys to lift this resolution and take action to do it at any time. So hopefully that gives a little bit of background on this. I'd like to thank Anthony for his efforts in working with Ken to get this drafted and before you in a relatively short order of business. We had to, as you know, amend our agenda in order to include this and make sure that it was done tonight. And with the situation evolving as it is with the COVID-19, we felt it was really time sensitive. So,
Ed, can I add two things?
Please do.
First thing is that not only does it say that you are, if approved, you will delegate authority to Ed and his designee to approve all bills, but any contracts entered into, anything further, if it has to go through public bidding, we will still have to comply with the public bidding rule, but still will allow that authority to be passed on to be able to approve that if we were going to approve another bid at some point in time. And as he said, it expires automatically on August 31st.
I have a question. I would never want this to happen, but is there some sort of a succession plan? Like, if you were unable to act on our behalf, who would act on our behalf?
Yes,
Judy's
absolutely
breaking up a little bit.
Judy asked if there was some need for someone to act in my stead if I was unable to act as superintendent. And the answer is yes. So really, both Anthony and Allison Hawley have in the past served as, for lack of a better word, kind of deputy superintendents in occasions where I've either traveled or had other obligations. So both of them have the capacity and certainly the leadership and more than enough ability to do that.
Okay, so they could do this?
Very definitely. And of course, the designee that Anthony's referring to would be our director of finance, in terms of continuing to maintain the business operation.
Any action that the superintendent or his designee would take would be provided to you at the next regularly scheduled board meeting. Any documentation for that, I should say.
Okay.
So there is no one person?
That's correct.
Okay. So there will be no acting superintendent or something happens to you. It would just be them two completing the task until we found someone.
That would be correct, and which would also be true if I stepped off the curb and there was a really big bus. So, you know, of course, as the board, they would serve in that capacity until you identified someone that you wanted to formally tap for that. You would typically identify someone maybe in the short term as an interim superintendent and then, you know, seek out some type of process where you would identify either make the interim superintendent permanent superintendent or hire a recruiting.
It's kind of a morbid conversation to have, but you know.
Well, really wasn't supposed to get that far.
Yeah, right.
It's supposed to be he can pay bills since we're not having meetings. But you can go to the bus hitting him off the curb.
Well, he's the one who brought it up.
It would take a pound of kryptonite. But so this is applying to all fees, bills above $50,000.
No, this is so you can have a bills list approved without a board meeting.
Okay.
Essentially.
Right.
Perfect. Can I get a motion
okay
to approve?
So the milk guy's got to bring the milk.
So moved.
There's no so milk
there's
anymore.
No milk.
No milk.
Second.
Mrs. Avalos.
Yes.
Mr. Davis.
Yes.
Mrs. DeGracias.
Yes.
Mrs. Hickey.
Yes.
Mr. Moore.
Yes.
Dr. Thompson.
Yes.
Ms. Williams.
Yes.
So the next item doesn't require probably too much discussion, only because it's a very much a work-a-day thing to do. You do it every year, usually at this time of year. And it's just a matter, it is required by statute, but it's a matter of the board directing us to begin this process. And while you are appointing the superintendent to draft the tentative budget, in this case, once again, that would likely mean my designee, who would be sitting over there.
Those of you on the phone, I'm waving my hands right now.
Can I get a motion to approve this resolution?
So moved.
Second.
Ms. Williams?
Yes.
Dr. Thompson?
Yes.
Mr. Moore?
Yes.
Mrs. Hickey?
Yes.
Mrs. DeGracias?
Yes.
Mr. Davis?
Yes.
Mrs. Avalos?
Yes.
Anthony, would you please speak to the school fees?
Yes. One moment while I find you.
Page 39.
Thank you. Okay. In your board packet on page 39, it shows the proposed fee schedule for fiscal year 21. In accordance with our past practice, I've shown the prior year, or well, in this case, current year schedule, and the proposed increase using the CPI rounded. You'll see the proposed increases on the right, as well as an early bird discount that goes from April 20th to June 15th. That's a little earlier than in years past, but it was a request that we open it up to those looking to register a little early. So there's an early bird discount from those dates. After June 15th is the standard rate, and you can see at the bottom the standard rates as you would see if you were purchasing them on the web store or writing a check. The CPI increase is 2.3%. Is there any questions at all about these proposed fees? A lot of them go up a very little amount. Some don't go up at all due to rounding, but I do it every few years in which I'll raise it a complete amount, like a dollar, to make up for the years where it didn't go up because the numbers are so small.
Is that milk for the whole $11 for?
Yes.
As a resident in town.
Yes.
Subsidization.
Yes, why don't we raise it more?
We've been raising it this amount with CPI over the past few years. We haven't done a cost analysis on these programs because they're not self-sustaining programs. It's kind of one big pot of money. There's nothing that shows that we can't raise it more, but to be in accordance with what we've done raising these types of fees by CPI increases, until you direct me otherwise, this is what we were looking to propose.
Do your vendors use CPI?
Vendors for the only
I mean,
one.
Is, not
the only,
just this. Right. I mean, things that you purchase, paper towels, whatever. When they go up, is it usually more than CPI or the same? Or?
It's usually industry based, the historical based. Okay. We've had a lot of bid discounts with our larger vendors, which really keep down those increases. Over the past years, I'd say prior to the last few years, but I'd say between 6 and 10 years ago, we were getting increases higher than that due to fuel charges going up, but that's been curtailed a bit. But no one outwardly says we're holding our increases to the consumer price index because our vendors don't know what that is.
Okay. Can we hold it to them? I mean, if they want to go up 15% on something, can we say CPI is only 2%?
Knowing that I think our largest vendors that we've had, like school specialty and warehouse direct and things like that, those negotiated discounts have held them probably below those numbers over the years. The other vendors that we don't even negotiate with, if we tried to hold them to that, they'd say try to go buy it somewhere else.
No other comments, concerns, questions? Can I get a motion to approve the fiscal year 2021 school fees?
Motion.
Second.
Ms. Williams?
Yes.
Dr. Thompson?
Yes.
Mr. Moore?
Yes.
Mrs. Hickey?
Yes.
Mrs. DeGracias?
Yes.
Mr. Davis?
Yes.
Mrs. Avalos?
Yes.
Thank you. The next item is our agreement for participation in the pre-kindergarten program. This is the inclusion preschool program that we have with the community center. Board members will see the agreement beginning on page 40 in your packet. The lion's share of the updates you will notice are the blue lines are dates. We have a couple of other verbiage changes that are recommended by both the director of the River Forest Community Center and by me. the vast majority, of course, of the document is the same as last year. We did have an attorney review this document last year. An attorney drafted the document. We took a year off from that and then had it reviewed last year. And, you know, it's still holding up fairly well. So we feel like this is a good agreement. It's a fair agreement between both parties. I think it respects both parties' needs to have information and make decisions in a timely manner. The only challenge that we have at this point is that the inclusive preschool program is so popular. And that's a conversation, of course, that we'd like to have separately. But as a partner, the River Forest Community Center has been tremendous thus far. And we'd like to continue, obviously, in the current arrangement to ensure that that's in place, at least.
Not that it affects this this agreement with actual services. And so they're planning on reconstructing the building. Do we know, is there any update on that?
Yes, so there, the River Forest Civic Center Association building, I always have to think and stop and remember what the acronym stands for, is currently, I know, being considered for either possible renovation or even community discussions about how nice it would be to reconstruct that facility elsewhere. There have been meetings among the different entities that have either a presence in the current building or possible interest in participating if the shared interest was to do either renovations or possible reconstruction. At this point, that has not moved past kind of an initial conversation stage. There are some, I think, tentative documents and diagrams that have been drafted. District 90 has been invited, although I'm sure the meeting will probably be rescheduled, was originally invited to a meeting this week where Katie Avalos was going to join me as the board designee to learn a little bit more about where that proposed project is. But at this stage, it is still a proposed project and preliminary at best. So it certainly would not affect our current or even in the near future, our arrangement with the community center and the space that we have available to us and the partnership that we have in place with them right now, if it proceeds.
And so they also were closed today. And so how are those preschool students getting service during this e-learning period?
I'm not as prepared to answer that maybe as I wish I would have been. All of our students, of course, general education students are receiving supports, but special education and related service qualifying students require specialized instruction. Denise Matthews is doing a fantastic job, I know, trying to coordinate those services and making sure that special needs students are getting their service minutes and that related service providers are setting up systems to support students. Related service providers would describe individuals like speech therapists, for example. But I didn't bring any information tonight to kind of speak about the details of how the children in the inclusive preschool are actually being served right now. I'm sorry.
Just a quick question. So am I right to believe that there are stricter rules coming around how we can handle student data and information next year?
I guess I'd need more information about that.
I don't know, just the last issue of that book that we always get here regarding what's coming down the pike, there's a whole section on student data and what we can expect that's coming down the pike regarding how we handle that data, who we share it with, et cetera.
Yes, so there is a new piece of legislation that was signed into law that goes into effect on July 1st.
Of this year.
Yes, it has not yet gone into effect for the coming year. So I have to check actually on the implementation date, but it is for the 2020-2021 school year. And really what it does is it requires school districts to have plans similar to the one that D90 established several years ago around protecting student data, data destruction, data maintenance, retention, agreement. agreements with third-party vendors. All of those elements are contained within that legislation. We feel good about where we are and that we've had a lot of those elements in place, but undoubtedly several of them will need to be either refined to comport with the specific elements of the law, or in some cases may need to be expanded. One example would be the requirement that districts post information about their contracts and agreements with technology vendors that are either gathering, using, or in possession of student data on our website. Currently, we have the information about the companies that we're working with embedded within our instructional student data privacy plan, but they're not posted separately as standalone items on our website. So that's an example of how we'll have to refine what we're doing.
Right.
We also are hoping to look to some other school districts that do that work initially and see if we can, you know, partner with them and learn from them as opposed to reinventing the wheel on some of the things that maybe, you know, we hadn't had in place. But I would say that in answer, I guess, to your question generally, D90 is in a pretty good place to be starting that because we have a really nice foundation.
Right. So I guess I'm asking because there's this whole section in items 6 and 7 that talk about student information confidentiality.
Yes.
Is there anything in that language that we need to change as a result of what's coming, or do you feel like where it sits now, it's fine?
I feel good about where it sits because it's not specific. That's more information sharing between the partners as opposed to an outside company that has possession of student data. And this was revised after we did the, I'm sorry, the name of the plan escapes me, the student data privacy plan. Gosh, the instructional technology student data privacy plan is the full name of it. It doesn't really roll off the tongue. But this was reviewed after that plan was put in place.
It's, I had a really lengthy discussion with Kevin Merkin about this over the summer last year. And because I was really interested because ed tech companies have really, you know, they always butt up against this because of the privacy. They can't do business in some states. Laws, but California has the most strict laws out of anyone in the country yet. But Kevin seemed to say we're all headed towards that direction. Whether, you know, how fast it goes, but, you know, it'll get there at some point.
And the number of students obviously enrolled in California is such that the technology companies know that they're going to have to meet that standard.
Right.
So that's helpful for the rest of us.
Right.
No further questions, comments. Can I get a motion to approve the agreement for participation in the pre-kindergarten program?
So moved.
Second.
Mrs. Avalos?
Yes.
Mr. Davis?
Yes.
Mrs. DeGrassi's?
Yes.
Mrs. Hickey?
Yes.
Mr. Moore?
Yes.
Dr. Thompson?
Yes.
Ms. Williams?
Yes.
The next item will look familiar. This was shared with the board in kind of a first viewing last month. It is the approval of the Board of Education meeting calendar for 2020-2021. And we talked a little bit last month, I know, about some of the proposed dates and why they fall on Tuesdays. Certainly prepared to answer any questions about this calendar. There weren't any asked last month, but we're glad to answer any now if you have them.
Looks pretty standard. Can I get a motion to approve the Board of Education meeting calendar for the 2021 school year?
So moved.
Awesome. Ms. Williams?
Yes.
Dr. Thompson?
Yes.
Mr. Moore?
Yes.
Mrs. Hickey?
Yes.
Mrs. DeGrassi's?
Yes.
Mr. Davis?
Yes.
Mrs. Avalos?
Yes.
And our last action item is actually, as was mentioned earlier, about the district window replacement bids. Anthony, would you walk us through the bid results?
Okay. So we had the recent bid opening for the district window replacement bids. I say district because it's at all three schools. Roosevelt is the largest portion of it. It actually covers about two-thirds of this school. The other third of the school was done during the 2012 facade renovation. There is a Lincoln portion that's limited to their gymnasium windows, which are on three sides of that gym. The Willard portion is very limited. It's only nine windows on the south side of that gym that wasn't part of the 2011 project. There was an alternate for the Lincoln to install a laminated tempered glass, so that's where you'll see the alternate price. There were only two contractors at the mandatory pre-bid walkthrough, and I'll tell you the reason for that is, and I've heard from a couple of contractors, especially the two that were there, this is an unprecedented year in terms of window projects all around. Chicago Public Schools just put in a massive order for windows. So I think these are the guys that are saying we're either large enough to handle it or we don't have any work and we can handle it. But everyone else pretty much stayed away because they're swamped. So the two people that did come to the pre-bid walkthrough did show up to the bid opening. And like everything this year, it's a little unusual circumstances. Just so you know, our estimate for the Roosevelt bid, well, for all three bids, I'll say them separately, without engineering costs are, Roosevelt is about $579,000, the Lincoln was about $129,000, and Willard is about $23,000. That's about a total of $731,000. That's the estimates we had. And before I move on with what actually happened at the bid opening, since that time, the State Board of Ed has approved all three life safety applications. So everything that was on those applications at the last time we spoke about them have been approved as projects. So we're moving forward to do those projects over the 3 to 5 year range as required per the Health Life Safety Code. This being one of them. So according to that project, we have $731,000 allocated. When you proceed to sell bonds and issue a levy, the pot of money that you get from both of those things will go to pay $731,000 of this. Some projects, if you approve bids, that can be more than those numbers. You're not restricted by that. Just in total, you have to do all the projects with that price. So if you approve something that's over $731,000, then you have to make it up somewhere else. So we're hoping that we can get some things done over the next few years that are less than that. This one comes in close enough that we're not too worried if you approve it. The apparent low bidder was Replacement Window Systems. However, they had a bid clarification attached to the bid. First time I've ever seen one of these in 19 years. Stated due to the unprecedented volume of school projects requiring similar windows, as well as the possible labor shortages and other global work stoppages due to COVID-19, completion by August 21st required date will not be possible. Remember, I'm saying that was written on their bid specifications or bid packet. The other bidder did not have that stipulation, but they had, prior to the bid opening, requested to use an alternate product. We feel that they were requesting to use an alternate product because they were probably coming up against that manufacturer saying they weren't guaranteeing it, so they asked us for an alternate. We allowed it because it is a reasonable alternate based on our architect's feelings, but even though it is a reasonable alternate for bidding purposes, I'm telling you now it's not as good of a product. It's reasonably alternate. So after discussions with the apparent low bidder, and discussions with their manufacturer, essentially, to go through this entire second paragraph quickly, if we fast-track everything, if you approve this tonight, we tell them tomorrow, they've already been on site measuring things, they can give a letter of intent to the manufacturer, they can be slotted in, as long as all the ordering is done by March 27th, they feel they can get the Roosevelt portion of the ordering in by July 13th, the week of July 13th, 5 weeks to the start of school, if that's the case, and they feel they have no problems, weather permitting, to finish that part of the job in that amount of time. Lincoln and Willard, they don't feel that there's any chance to finish by that time, but knowing that their gymnasium windows, especially Willard, being just a small bank, Those can be done at winter and even spring break of next year, which these prices would hold. That was all discussed 5 days ago. So there's no new information, but I've talked with them today, and they said, well, there's nothing that the manufacturer has said that they certainly can't guarantee it now or anything else, but every day changes. They will never start a bank of windows, as I say in here, that they can't put up that very day. They can take out and put up about one classroom a day. So we're under the belief that right now, if everything doesn't change drastically between now and July 13th, if you approve these bids at these prices, by the end of fiscal year 21, you will have all of these projects done, and with the primary one, Roosevelt, done by the start of school.
I think that sounds reasonable.
Where do windows come from?
I do not know. This manufacturer, they're Traco windows. I can look it up if you give me some time. They're the most popular industrial commercial windows out there.
Okay.
Traco is, don't look it up now because Traco is no longer called Traco. I'll have to find out what the new name is and look it up for you.
Okay.
I mean, I guess you could try it, but I don't know where they come from. I do not believe they're overseas.
Okay, so they're here.
They're an American company. But even though they're an American company, I don't know where they
source materials.
Source materials could come from different places.
And you understand the other company had a, the product wasn't as well made. You mean the windows aren't as well made with the other company?
I guess you can say when you are ranking products, you think about which ones are better. And for lack of technical terms, our architect has said, the other ones are reasonable, and they're a decent alternative. But if he had to rank them, he would list the ones that RWS can go with as better, actually the best. The other company with a lesser product was more money anyway, so I wouldn't recommend
that. Right. And what type of guarantee does RWS provide with their windows?
When you say did you say guarantee on the windows?
The work they're doing.
Well, they are not guaranteeing that they can finish by August 21st for the entire project, but they are guaranteeing that if they get the order through and fast track it, that they have been given reasonable assurance by the manufacturer that they will have windows delivered on site here by the week of July 13th. But as I said before, all of these assurances
depends
and conversations were held 5 days
yeah.
ago. No
right,
one has made any
right.
changes because I'm not sure anyone really knows anymore.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
All right.
Is it Conier?
Yes.
Okay. And
so we'd be stuck in a quandary then if we prove this, something happened, whatever, this thing.
I can't hear.
What's our worst case scenario?
Okay, so he asked what's the quandary we'd be stuck in. Actually, this morning I asked, is there any way to hold these, if something bad, act of God continued, and they couldn't deliver, fulfill their promise to complete the project, would we have any ability to hold them to these prices? Actually, now I haven't gotten any legal response because I just asked this question this morning. They may be the ones who want that clarified because legally they may be able to get out of the contract because of an act of God and not be required to hold these prices past this fiscal year, knowing that it was out of their control to be able to complete this project. So me bringing it up was more of, yeah, well, that was our question to you. So there will be some legal discussions, but I don't think the worst case scenario would be they wouldn't start or finish the project. If they didn't get any windows at all, they wouldn't start.
Okay.
Looks like they are headquartered in Norcross, Georgia.
Where do they make the windows?
I'm trying to find that out.
Okay, performance bond. Could they have a higher one? Why don't they have a higher one?
No. That's the cost of it. It's, see, the higher the price, the higher the risk. If you have the ability to get an A10 bond, or in this case, I'm sorry, for a window project, it's only an A7. If you can get the ability to get an A7 bond for only $3,700, your insurance company believes you're a low risk.
Okay. Good questions. Any other questions?
Bloomsburg, PA is where the major manufacturing is.
Pennsylvania?
They also have one in Springdale, Arkansas, and another one in Cranberry Township, Pennsylvania, Visalia, California.
And so they're all domestic, in other words?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
9:30, she's still reading.
Long
you're
Beach,
the one who
asked this question, and I want to be a thorough.
All very good questions and concerns. Thank you.
Thank you, Judy.
If there are no other concerns
Waco,
or questions,
Texas.
Can I get a motion to approve the district window replacement bid results?
And if you are approving that, you're approving it at $737,499, so all three buildings.
Yes.
With the assumption that all the prices are the same?
Yes.
Okay.
Then we'll be signing a contract for this amount if you approve this.
Yes. And they'll.
What the contract will say.
We will only pay this amount, and it will get done by the end of the fiscal year of 2021.
Any act of God that could take us out of that or take them out of that remains to be seen.
I feel like that's going to happen tomorrow now, but okay. Yeah.
Right. There's locusts outside the window right now.
It's a high-quality window.
Motion.
They're not coming. Can I get a motion to approve the district window replacement?
Second.
So moved.
Ms. Williams.
Yes.
Dr. Thompson.
Yes.
Mr. Moore.
Yes.
Mrs. Hickey.
Yes.
Mrs. DeGracias.
Yes.
Mr. Davis.
Yes.
Mrs. Avalos?
Yes.
Okay, moving on to so many important
Yes, so we have information items, absolutely. So we're going to start tonight, actually, with the enrollment statistics. Of course, we share these with the board. They are a good time, but...
the look he just gave me.
It's caught.
Oh.
As the board can see, the district is close to the high estimate that was provided by our recent CASARDA geodemographic survey. Student enrollment at Lincoln currently is 390 children. Willard is currently 400. It's been some time, actually, since Willard has been larger than Lincoln. And then currently 673 children at Roosevelt. So our current total enrollment at this time, including special education students attending out of district, is 1,473 students. This number is actually important because we use it to guide a lot of the projections, obviously, for the coming year, and you'll see references to this in the staffing plan that's going to be discussed a little bit later tonight, both here as an information item and then available for board questions during closed session. Any questions about enrollment?
Okay. Very good numbers. I mean, close. They're closer.
They are. And you'll see some projected numbers for next year that start to look a little more skewed when we look at the instructional staffing plan. The next item is we'd like to present Stacy and I, with many thanks to Dr. Nicole Thompson, is the current board policy 4:180. Entitled Pandemic Preparedness. The board, of course, has had a policy pertaining to this since August 2012, but there's some specific language in here that after Rich particularly had called this out and noted, was fairly specific and might make it hard to apply the policy to universal situations moving forward. So Dr. Thompson, again, was kind enough to give us her recommendation on some verbiage to avoid, and we went through and are presenting now a red line version with the request that the board consider this for potential adoption next month, second reading, or something similar that removes specific references to influenza and virus and makes the pandemic preparedness policy more general to any type of pandemic that could occur. Not that we haven't had enough pandemic, but.
I like the changes that have been made. It looks like just effective.
Dr. Thompson, did you have anything to share specific? Or if not, just thank you.
I couldn't hear the comment that was made.
We couldn't hear that, those of us on the phone.
Stacy's comment?
Yes.
Yeah, I just said I like the changes that were made with Nicole's consultation.
Say that one more time. I'm sorry.
She stated that she is likes the changes that were made under your consultation, Nicole.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's all I have. I just thought it would be best just so we could, you know, cover all our bases just in case we get something else that's not virus based. Hopefully that won't happen, but yeah.
Well, thank you for your time and attention to it. And again, this is just a first reading, so we'll be bringing it back to the board for consideration on possible approval next month.
Okay.
That was policy 4180, correct?
Yes.
Did you talk about the instructional staffing plan?
Oh, I didn't. I'm sorry. I apologize. I went out of order.
You had mentioned with the enrollments that they had implications for our instructional planning staffing.
Yes. Thank you for that, Rich. I think my packet was also out of order. I apologize for that.
And I think we are going to talk about it in more detail later.
That's correct. Thank you. So to summarize what Rich had just shared, you know, we made comments about the enrollments and the applicability to the instructional staffing plan. The staffing plan is built upon those enrollments and projections for the coming year. As Cal had mentioned, currently the numbers are fairly consistent, but what you'll find in the detail of the instructional staffing plan is that we're anticipating a increase, pretty sizable increase at Roosevelt, that'll take Roosevelt over 700 students next year, which is the first time that's ever happened. That's largely due, as you can imagine, to the transition of current fourth grade students up to fifth. So you're seeing also a commensurate reduction in enrollments at Lincoln and Willard that are actually helpful in terms of bringing those school enrollments down to a little bit more manageable size. But there are three quite large classes at Roosevelt next year, which is really the justification for why that enrollment is intended to be so high.
We've been expecting this for a while.
Well, we've been watching as those classes continue to move up the chain. Yeah, so, and as I think you'll see when the board looks in more detail at that plan later in closed session, there are accommodations that, you know, the principal has made that'll help us adjust to that very satisfactorily. And the building does, well, you know, it'll be more tightly scheduled than it has been in the past. We do have certainly the physical capacity with proper scheduling accommodations to house 700 students. We'll be making other adjustments throughout the program to ensure a high quality experience for all those kids. Looking at things like the way lunches are configured and you know, that there are adequate hands to, you know, ensure that activities and opportunities for children are available. But
yeah,
it will require some thought and foresight. Next item on the information items is the One District, Many Voices storytelling event. We wanted to share, unfortunately tonight, I think Stacy had already mentioned a word about this, that for the time being, the One District, Many Voices storytelling event is going to be held off. It was scheduled originally for April 22nd. There was a great team of, and is, of committee members, a couple of parents, Dawn, another administrator, a teacher, who were actively working to kind of get that off the ground. But fortunately, they hadn't gone too far ahead, and so most of the work that they've done can be held on to with the possibility. We've all kind of are hoping towards implementing that instead in the fall, but we'll want to take that to the Inclusiveness Advisory Board and see if we can garner their support and figure out how we would dovetail that in a way that's really effective. But it is a disappointment, of course, and so and an important event like so many others this spring that we know we'll have to figure out a way to, you know, handle those things thoughtfully. We're hoping in many cases we will be postponing and not canceling or rescheduling, but of course that's going to be contingent kind of on a case-by-case basis. So the last information item we had tonight was really just to share a few documents with the board, probably things that are already very familiar regarding the district's response to the COVID-19 situation. The board packet includes a copy of the e-learning plan, which of course board members have seen. The most recent guidance before today from the State Board of Education regarding the coronavirus and an FAQ on how districts are expected to respond to certain situations. There's also a couple of documents that are specific to the board, starting on pages 71. Starting on page 75, which is actually a document pertaining to the actual e-learning plan submission that was approved by West 40 and some correspondence also from the state superintendent. We also have included some copies of letters and communication that were sent to families in preparation for e-learning. Since the board packet was printed last week, there have been additional communications. So really what this has come down to is, you know, several specific kind of areas of focus. The greatest one, I think, largely has been the planning for instruction piece. Can't say enough good things about the role that our principals and our teachers and support staff have played in ensuring that we got the e-learning plan framework up and implemented today successfully. There were certainly elements within the first day of e-learning that were challenges, some of which we expected, others which were unanticipated, but I think everybody really went, including parents and students, went towards the day with a problem-solving approach, and that helped a lot in terms of coming up with some solutions to the minor problems that we encountered.
What were some of the biggest challenges?
Some of the issues pertain to everything from parents and passwords, in terms of logging into their children's accounts, ensuring that the technology worked, you know, for kids, particularly at the elementary level, the technology is not as familiar to them. They do have the devices assigned to them on a one-to-one basis during the school day, but, you know, taking them home is different, and making sure that they're connected to the internet at home and functioning, you know, the way the kids see them functioning for them at school is a little different. Attendance and coordinating that, you know, those are the types of things that you would probably expect on the rollout of a program like this. But I can't say enough good things that not only about the teachers' work, but their availability, I think, to parents and to students during the day. Our students, the feedback I've received, were genuinely really actively involved and engaged in the learning. And our administrative team, you know, was very available today and will continue to be to provide supports. You know, the role of administrators with this project is a little bit like, you know, the behind the curtain kind of thing. If they do their job well in overseeing a lot of the functions of an e-learning day, my hope is you wouldn't notice they were there. But part of their task is communicating with staff and service providers, ensuring that specialists are providing the teachers with lesson supports and resources, responding to parents and students needing assistance with teaching and learning questions, preparing and sending school-level communications for parents and families, collaborating with other administrators about identified problems and problem-solving, monitoring to see that related service providers are reaching out to students and families to assist and serve them, ensuring the teachers are communicating effectively with parents and students, and, dare I say, continuing to work on the current projects that they have so that we're prepared to hit the ground running when we reopen. So I'm really proud of the work that they've done and grateful to everyone. The other areas of focus for this include communications, of which I can't say enough great things about our director of communications. Dawn has been tremendous. Families have also been really great about responding to us with questions and concerns and keeping those lines of communication open. We have had communications, as I hope you would expect, not just internally, but with the other agencies in Oak Park and River Forest, a couple of times with group phone calls. I had two phone calls, large mass phone calls over the weekend with the Illinois State Board of Education, so they've been highly responsive. The Illinois Association of School Administrators has been a great support. You know, there's been a lot, I think, of outreach to ensure that school districts have what they need. The third area that has been also really important has been ensuring that we're set up to continue to run the business of the district. You know, while we're a teaching and learning organization, the school district is also an employer, and we need to make sure that we meet all of our obligations to our employees around pay and safety and supports. We have obligations to vendors and to companies, so we need to ensure that we're paying our invoices. You know, we have a lot of obligations, just as any employer would. So coordinating those and making sure that the district office is running effectively, it's been no small thing. The district office staff and the district administrators have been very flexible. And that, I think, has also gone a long way towards ensuring that we have a model in place that's going to allow us to run the business pretty much into perpetuity. Certainly none of us hopes that that's the need, but we think we're okay for that. So I'm prepared to answer any questions you have. I could probably talk longer than you would wish on the topic, but I guess the one other thing I would want to share that is not missed on anyone has been the support and leadership from the Board of Education. Your kind of unequivocal support in anything that the administration and the staff has needed to get this done, be it support financially or other resources, giving us the space and the berth to do this work and to rely on the expertise that we have within. Those things are really meaningful. So thank you.
Well, thank you, Ed. I mean, there were so many decisions to be made at the top, but every time you went down a layer, there's another 100 minuscule but very important decisions being made on everybody's part. So it's stressful and learning occurred today. You guys did an excellent job. So
it's hard to believe that our last board meeting, we were talking about this as a possibility. And here we are, it's actually happened. But you and your team have made it seem flawless and easy, and I know it wasn't. I just personally, as a parent, appreciate just the leadership that you've shown. So,
thank you. So the goal, of course, is how we can continue to refine it and make it better. And so, you know, we've had today we had an administrator Google Hangout. I don't know if anybody in the room has ever been on a Hangout. It's like a Zoom call where you have basically everybody on together on the video screen, and we work through the things that were working well and troubleshoot. Triaged some things. The goal will be that this will, you know, hopefully continue to get better as we do it. So, you know, our aspirations are moving more from the triage place to how we can continue to make it more robust and at the same time manageable for staff. Keeping high quality learning in front of kids in a way that's doable and is respectful of families and parents as well is no small thing. So we'll continue to work on it. We know we've got room to grow, but we appreciate everyone's patience, and please do know that we're going to continue to, you know, to try and make improvements where we can.
Reminding the kids that no, spring break does not actually start until next week.
So that's true. That's true. And there will be actually no e-learning that day. We did announce, of course, to families and staff that because of the governor's mandated closures, what had initially been D90 only being closed through the 30th will now be through the 31st. Well, 29th will now be through the 30th. So the Monday after spring break, is when students return to D90, will be on an e-learning day. We have gotten a lot of questions, as folks would expect, about you know, trying to forecast for whether students will be returning for sure on the 31st or if we anticipate an ongoing closure. Today, we are not certain of that. We expect we're going to get some more guidance on that, both from ISBE and from the state. But, you know, as soon as the district can say with any certainty about whether or not we expect or are tentatively planning for the students to return on the 31st or maybe extending that closure, we will share that with families. So we do ask that families and staff members monitor email over spring break, as that's likely the time when information is going to become available. Our goal, however, is not to wait, of course, until the 0 hour to share that. If we anticipate that closures would continue, you know, we will do our very best to communicate that as early as possible without compromising our ability to bring kids back in as soon as safe.
So for kids who get meals...
I just wanted to share something with the projections that at least what we're seeing now with our emails at the hospital and different papers that are written right now. They're suspecting that we'll see a peak in about 8 weeks from now, and then with the curve flattening out after that. The interesting thing with kids, and there's some articles that are in that pre-published phase, but they, you know, you can kind of see them, but they're not actually in the article yet, but they're accepted, that a lot of the kids, as you guys probably know, don't show symptoms even when they are positive. So there could be quite a few kids that are positive with COVID-19 with no symptoms at all, so they feel fine, but they could also be shedders and share that virus. Other people around them, grandparents, other kids, which is, I'm sure that information has already been disseminated, but just when I was surprised to see the peak is estimated to be 8 weeks from now. So
I would have thought it would be sooner.
No, because think about some of the other countries, they've been battling this since November, and they're just now getting it under control.
Nicole, this is Judy.
Yeah.
I was just wondering if you think one of the challenges with that is that the testing hasn't been widely available.
So, yeah, so we still don't, even, you know, at our hospital, we don't have tests. All we have, we have criteria that we have to go by with CDC, and if you meet the criteria, then we send out that to the CDC for them to test. But you can be sick and not meet the criteria, and we can't test you because the CDC doesn't have the capacity to do so because they don't have enough tests. The funding was stripped and different things like that. Unfortunately, our government didn't, support the CDC so they could be prepared in situations like this. It makes it harder for us to contain it when we can't test
right.
to find out who actually has it.
Thank you, Nicole. I think you may have heard us all lean very close into the phone to listen to that. The more information we get, the better. As we get information,
yeah.
Things are changing. Going back to the e-learning plan, I think that the core of the plan and delivering a continuity of learning, right, is there. And I hope we flatten the bubble. Is that how it
comes?
There's
a
curve. Flatten the curve. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not going away anytime soon, so thank you.
So, Ed, quickly, for students who get meals here, I know that there was a plan that was available. Has it been taken advantage of yet?
Yeah, I'll ask that Anthony say a word about that. He's overseeing the distribution of our free and reduced lunches.
We put out a notification to, in the general communications that Don put out, if you qualify for a free reduced lunch, that distribution would be held at the administration building between 11:30 and 12:30 each day. So they have to come pick up each day. There was a thought to get more shelf-stable, non-perishable foods and have one distribution, but the quality of those foods from our supplier, the high school district's cafeteria, was not what we felt was something that we'd want to distribute, so we have perishable foods in which we were distributing today. And we'll every day and for the rest of this week. And I guess then we'll have spring break off, and then we will decide what to do after that.
The last thing I'd share pursuant to that actually is in response to a question that you had earlier tonight, Rich, about the inclusion preschool. And I did do some digging here very quickly, and it looks as though in a response from Ms. Matthews, our director of special education. The inclusive preschool students, folks in the room may or may not be aware, do not have devices issued to them. pre-K kids don't have a one-to-one. And so because of that, the Inclusion Preschool faculty and staff have been sending parents an email every morning with the activities for the day. The students that need accommodations will be receiving a separate email that has additional information. One of the nice things is that the relationship between our faculty here and D90 and the River Forest Community Center is very strong. And so our faculty has also sent that information to the community center, to Leah, with the intention that they will be utilizing the same at-home activities, remote learning activities for children that are enrolled through the community center as well.
I have a friend whose child is in the preschool program, and she said they had a great time doing everything.
Did they? Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry I didn't know more about the specific details. There have been a lot of moving parts over the course of the last week or
just
so.
A little bit.
And what it really speaks to, honestly, is the degree to which you can count on our administrators who are all handling these different areas of responsibility to take it. They have just been amazing. And, you know, when I've delegated them, they've taken the ball and they've run with it.
Thank you, everyone.
So that represents our superintendent's report tonight.
Okay. Not soon enough because my computer just died.
Oh.
I know this personnel report very well that we're about to look into, but we are moving to closed session. So I would need a motion to move to closed session according to the code to discuss the appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the public body or legal counsel for the public body, including hearing testimony on a complaint lodged against an employee of the public body or against legal counsel for the public body to determine its validity.
And
collective negotiation matters between the public body and its employees or their representatives, or deliberations concerning salary schedules for one or more classes of employees.
So moved.
Mrs. Avalos?
Yes.
Mr. Davis?
Yes.
Mrs. DeGracias?
Yes.
Mrs. Hickey?
Yes.
Mr. Moore?
Yes.
Dr. Thompson? Dr. Thompson?
Can you hear me? Yes. Can you hear me? I'm
Ms.
here.
Williams?
Yes, we can hear you. Yes.
Okay. All right. We're out of open.